This is Smash Mouth Talk. If you can't accept that, then fuck off. I am your host, Louis B. I am your Brooklyn Puerto Rican assassin, broadcasting live from New York City. I am actually doubly honored to have Sleepy Salsa. He's a blogger with, and I said salsa with the Spanish accent. Oh, I'm such a spick today. This Sleepy Salsa, he is a blogger with the blog thelastbastille.wordpress.com, and also our favorite Kiwi. I don't know if you guys heard, I hosted his show when he was on vacation. He is he's rich with that blue shield money, and if you want a strong erection, I suggest you use Blue Shield. So check his show out. It's the immortal Vinnie Eastwood, and of course he hosts the Vinnie Eastwood Show live from New Zealand. There you go. How did I have a brain fart? And go to his show, thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. It's live Monday through Friday on American Freedom Radio. And of course he's filming himself right now. So he turned on his camera, so hopefully he's wearing pants. So today, this is the first hour we're going to be talking about the Common Law Court, which is a citizen-run court. But I should have just asked him that. And the second hour, we're going to be talking about guns, because everyone's talking about guns, whether we should ban them, what should we do to assault rifles, limit the amount of bullets, and all that. All that loveliness. So anyways, gentlemen, how you guys doing?
Somewhat fabulous.
Somewhat fabulous. So how was your day? Did you
Well, we walked up and down the main street of Auckland today. Biggest chemtrail protest we've ever had, which means it was like maybe about 20 people or something. It's normally, I think the first one I did, it was just me and a mate. Second one we did four intersections around the city, and we had about maybe 12 people. Third one we did was in Hamilton, New Zealand, and we had maybe 14 people. And today we had about 20, and we went down the main street waving our placards, 100-watt megaphone, full-body camouflage, with a paintball mask on to look really scary and intimidating, and gas masks and everything all over. I think we caused quite a stir, but...
So what was the point of this?
Well, the point is to not wake people up. The point is just to let all the awake people know, and even specifically just the people in the protest, that you're not alone. You know, you're not the only one who can see the chemtrails. You're not the only one who knows what's going on. Also to have a few laughs and have some fun while we're doing it. And
so basically, it was a circle jerk.
That's right.
Okay. Just so you know.
This is the astute analysis that you get from Louis B. on the Crotch Shot Radio, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, of course, yes. Yeah, I call it how I see it. You know what I mean? I just...
Louis, you just put the anal into analysis, you know?
Yes, I do. Thank you. Thank you. So anyways, yeah, Sleepy, how you doing?
I am doing well and fine this wonderful January evening, Louis. Thanks for asking.
You're welcome. So, you're a blogger with The Last Bastille. In fact, you're the one that told me about the Common Law Court. And, you know, I used it to bring charges against Luke Rakowski, but the first question would have to be, which everyone will probably be asking, what is the Common Law Court?
Well, Louis, the Committee of Safety Common Law Court, the COSCLC, I guess you could describe it as a citizen's grand jury of sorts. Mm-hmm. Let me explain a little bit what the problem has been in the Patriot community, as well as the various political dissonance circles, and then I'll kind of segue into what it's about. If anyone's ever paid attention, various types of political dissidents, including constitutionalists, have unfortunately turned infighting into an art form. It's gotten so bad to the point that those within the Patriot community have been slandered libeled and defamed by those very folks who claim to pursue the same ends that the other fellow does. So the real problem with internal balkanization, also known as infighting, same thing, is that by mentioning any particular examples of it, especially if it's sensitive details, you inadvertently perpetuate it. Now, this is because an individual, even one who is not party to a dispute and refuses to take sides, will be accused by the followers of one of the disputed parties to be secretly siding with one against the other. So the only real way around this, so in other words, the adherents of A and the adherents of B will always be at each other's throats, and even people who are just, you know, neutral, just other folks who just heard about the dispute. So the only real way around this is to have an objective third-party arbitrator whose procedures and rulings are agreed to by the contending parties in the attempt to finally put the dispute to rest. Put another way, there's too much in the alternative media, Louis, that is, I guess you could call it trial by press. And according to the Bill of Rights, we're supposed to have a trial by jury. So if we're going to self-regulate, i.e. be self-disciplined enough as political dissidents in order to eventually get to the point of actually securing our liberties, we have to be able to deal with our fellow compatriots as civilly as possible, because we're supposed to work with each other against our common enemy. So obviously, so we have to move us to resolve disputes internally.
So is that the idea of the last Bastille? Because I thought it was just a fish that wore a suit of armor or something.
Actually, no, the name for the blog, I explained that in a different article, but that's completely different. The Last Bastille is my blog. The Committee of Safety Common Law Corps, the COSCLC, is the organization that is involved with resolving disputes. And Louis, if you don't mind, I'd like to explain briefly the meaning behind the words of the organization, the title of it.
Okay, which will probably bring me to my next question. What are the principles of the CLC?
Okay, well, Louis, during the American Revolutionary War for Independence, Committees of Safety, COS, were instrumentally pivotal in conducting the war effort. Following the battles of Lexington and Concord, one of their chief functions was to try criminal cases, although not civil ones. Those were done after the war. Given that the British imperial court system had broken down, and I would also postulate the what would pass itself off as the federal court system would be something akin to the British imperial one of the 1760s and 70s. Now, these COS were also constantly engaged in the task of determining individual loyalties towards the cause for independence. Those who chose to remain as Tories were usually ostracized until they chose to join the local association. Now, the organization is also called the Committee of Safety Common Law Court, so let's look at those words. So classical liberal philosophers have maintained that the law is not intended as a tool of tyrannical oppression, as many political dissidents unfortunately these days interpret it as such, because the original purpose of the law is supposed to be a form of collective self-defense. As Frederick Bastiat says, quote, its mission is to prevent the rights of one from interfering with those of another, end quote. So while it may have been based in part on l'etat-en-loi, the principle of justice was always based on the absence of plunder. So the Committee of Safety Common Law Court, the COSCLC, is just that neutral third-party arbitrator that is badly needed to bring balance to the patriot community. By ingeniously using the internet as a tool in order to enhance capabilities, such as ease of communication, like we're doing right now, and overcoming difficulties, such as the lack of geographical proximity, since everybody's kind of scattered all about, the COSCLC provides the fairest means of dealing with disruptions between dissidents within such a context. For the sake of comparison, it would not be too far off the mark to describe the COSCLC as the epitome of what the Dispute Resolution Organization, or DRO, libertarian concept should have been, given that it is an organization whose very purpose is to resolve disputes.
So basically the CLC are middle arbitrators between two disputing parties.
Neutral, yes.
And can I ask, is there a central website where people can go and access this network?
Yes, of course. If you are interested in learning more about the Committee of Safety Common Law Corps, and especially if you are interested in volunteering to serve, because Lord knows they could use plenty of volunteers, they are located at www.committee.org, committee.org/court with capital C, committee.org/court, capital C, and you can follow the instructions from there to learn in more gratuitous detail how the organization works, as well as how to go about volunteering. But this is just a brief synopsis of the what I was just describing just a moment ago, just a very, very brief synopsis of what it is. And quite frankly, I have looked around various political dissident circles, including the Patriot community specifically, and not one organization I have found is seriously dealing with the number one threat to the Patriot community, which is internal balkanization, other than the COSCLC. So these guys are fundamentally important, because if we cannot work with each other, why in God's name can we expect to push against, to combine our efforts and push against the establishment that equally oppresses us all?
Well, it seems to me that you fight against common enemies. The enemy of my enemy is my friend, right? And we should come together on that basis, knowing that a lot of the founding fathers really hated each other.
Yeah,
but they understood that you know, the guy down the road from me who's just, you know, a bit of a douchebag or whatever, maybe I don't like him, he's not actually likely to try and take my guns and try and enslave me with taxes. So how about we agree on the points that we can and move forward on that basis? And maybe once we've got a society that isn't about to be ruthlessly exterminated by ruthless sociopathic criminal scumbaggery, then we can hash out whatever details.
Yeah, my goodness. I mean, I'm reading this book that I was talking privately with Sleepy Sauce about. It's called, like, let me grab it right here, The United States Constitution, A Graphic Adaptation. And, I mean, they really go into how during the whole ratification process, they were at each other's throats. They had to take it to the people. I mean, the states wanted to keep all the power. They wanted a weaker central government, you know, but in order to keep everything together. But, I mean, that's the official tangent of the show. But, yeah, I'm just agreeing with how they hated each other.
Yeah, it's funny because I've been I don't know why people turn to me sometimes, but I know a lot of kind of high level patriots and truthers, and every now and again they'll be going through real rough times, like real depressed, so they'll be real pissed off with one person or the other, and they approach me and start saying, "Well, this guy said this and that and the other," and instead of reading those things, I can't be really bothered reading a whole lot, really.
Mm-hmm.
I instead talk to the people and kind of just put them in their place and just go, "Look, bro, in this movement, we're all like that. We're all traumatized, damaged goods, people who've got these type of tics, and some of us have gotten paranoid. Some of us are really unhealthy or whatever. We've got massive problems, and it's impossible for us to get along." And some of the times it really disillusions people, and they want to cast the whole movement aside.
Okay.
We got
James on the line, and also, which one's Amit? I don't know which one's Amit, Connecticut or California. Well, we got James from Texas on. James, if you want to say something, feel free to jump into the conversation. Let me get Connecticut. Connecticut, how you doing?
Hello?
We can hear you now, Connecticut.
Yep. Hey, guys, how's it going?
Amit?
Yeah, it's me.
Oh, okay, yeah, because it's usually Florida for you. All right, so you wanted to say something?
Yeah, all right, so we're talking about fragmentation and internal conflict. These are local countermeasures against that the early colonists had to set up during the war effort in order to maintain control. The problem is that it seems to me that ever since the Civil War, we've lost the entire momentum of smaller centralized government. How to take it back is a tough cookie to crumble. I mean, you're talking about reversing everything from the Civil War onward to now. I mean, it's kind of sad that the entire, the entire social push towards abolition of slavery was used to basically incite a monolithically large and overbearing centralized government, and basically Trump's centralized government over small local governments. How to go about reversing that? I'm not sure how that can be accomplished, really, because it's almost basically it's almost like telling and negotiating with a guy with, you know, since we're talking about guns, I'll just give this example. How do you really negotiate with a guy who's got a gun and you don't? In the end, doesn't he have the end all veto leverage just to say, hey, I don't care, I'm going to do it my way because I've got the guns, I've got the tanks, and for all those who lived through the civil rights movement, I've got the dogs and I've got the fire hoses. So,
yeah.
I mean, how do you negotiate? I mean, the colonists tried to do this with King George, and he basically had the delegates hung, quartered, and castrated, not to mention tarred and feathered. I don't understand how we can go about, you know, diplomatically going to someone who's got a gun. I mean, my dad tried to talk down this armed robbery that he had to go through, and it didn't work too well for him. Yeah,
Michael, you've made a really interesting point there, and you heard of the free man on the land movement and all of that kind of thing. I've had dozens and dozens of these people on my show, and what they do technically works, but you know what they all have in common? All of these free men on the land who no longer have to pay their taxes or be enslaved by the system, they're all utterly broke and constantly harassed. That's called freedom, because you're trying to argue with somebody who doesn't argue. They simply shoot you or harass you.
I think we're living in a time where I am not necessarily under the tyranny of a tyrant, of a fascist, of a monarchy that still rules with the presumption of, you know, divine right to rule. You know, I'm not living under a tyranny of that. I'm living under a tyranny of my neighbor's ignorance and stupidity.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, that almost seems like it's a losing battle, because the first thing you have to do in a democracy is fight the people. I mean, it almost seems like you have to get them to do anything before you can even go talk to these head honcho guys. And even
it's actually kind of funny you mentioned that, because I was watching this documentary on Martin Luther King yesterday, since Monday is Martin Luther King Day.
Yeah.
And I just came to the realization, if it wasn't for people like Dr. King, no one would have gotten off their ass to do anything. Everyone would have just continued being happy, being little slaves, not doing anything, until someone got it started. And I run into this all the time, especially since I've gone after Luke. They're like, oh, well, Luke has done this, Luke has done that. What have you done? No. The real question is, what have you done? No, you would just rather throw money at one patriot rock star, as Sleepy would put it, you know, to do all the work. But we still haven't had that whole activation yet. I mean, Sleepy, what are your when it comes to this? I mean, when you guys do, when the COC does reach a decision, seeing how the whole attitude is, and this is the question that I've gotten myself, why should their decision be respected?
Okay, well, it should be kept in mind the entire time that I think what you're getting at is enforcement, correct?
Well, yeah, how are the decisions enforced as well?
Okay, sure. Well, once a I'm going to just keep this as simple as possible in the interest of time. Essentially, once the grand jury has come to decide that there is probable cause for an indictment, they issue it, the accused gets it, received by email, and then if it turns out that there's obviously at that point the accused pretty much has a choice to either respond to the indictment or not. If he does decide to respond to it, then it's going to go before the chief jury, and then they're going to just choose on matters of guilt and innocence. And actually, that's happened before. However, and then, of course, the results of that are published. Interestingly, if they decide not to respond to it, then the indictment is still published instead of as a verdict. It's published instead as an unanswered indictment. Now, whether the CLC produces an unanswered indictment or a verdict, once it's published, then the enforcement is in the hands of the Patriot community as well as just political dissidents in general. And the enforcement mechanism, what their responsibility is to use ostracism. For instance, if you – let's just say that let's say next month, theoretically, hypothetically, next month the CLC comes out with a, let's say, unanswered indictment against Joe Schmo. And Joe Schmo did 20 awful different things. Now, you, as a fellow dissident or part of the Patriot community, you basically look and see, like, wow, this guy did awful thing, A, B, C, D. Maybe we shouldn't associate with him. Maybe, just maybe, if he's got a store, especially if it's an online store, and he's selling stuff like merchandise or T-shirts or, dare I say, a documentary he made himself.
And perhaps some poisonous drink mix.
Okay, we don't need to get too specific. The point is that it could be anybody.
We're talking about Alex Jones. Fuck.
No. I don't want to get specific. The point is it could be anybody. So the point here is that it's like, well, if it's proved that for probable cause, in the case of an unanswered indictment, that so-and-so did all this horrible crap, then maybe other dissidents should get away and ostracize them because who knows what their deal is. They may be a useful idiot, or they may even be controlled opposition, but at the end of the day, does it really matter? I would argue, no, it doesn't, because at the end of the day, they're still harmful for those of us who are serious about securing our liberties. Because part of securing your liberties is making sure you associate with people of good character who are interested like you are about your freedoms. And
right,
people,
so
who
basically,
prima donnas, people who want to be prima donnas and, you know, yak all day and cause division and harm and the establishment and laughs at us is very harmful.
The upshot is you've just defined that you have no enforcement ability. You can't force anybody to do anything. That's not enforcement. That's recommendation, right? Like when the government appoints a committee that makes recommendations, they mean nothing without force behind them. You can't stop anybody. I mean, can I ask you? Could you cite a single example of somebody's website who has been shut down or had all of their listeners turn off them or all of their revenue dry up because you've exposed them? No.
Not to the degree that you're demanding. There has been less traffic that I'm vaguely aware of, and there have been a, let's just say, certain disreputable individuals.
Could you give a specific example? You said there's less traffic?
Sure. Like
How many to how many?
Well, I cannot cite any figures right offhand because, unfortunately, they're not publicly available, so all of this is kind of secondhand information as far as I'm aware because I'm a couple degrees
removed.
So you
don't know if their visitation even
went
down?
Let me answer your question. The case that came before Louis, which we'll get into, was the case of Swan versus Light. And Rick Light, who is the accused, there's that whole list of horrible stuff. And if we have time, we can get into that if you want, but it would be better if we focus on Louis' case. Rick Light, he's been ostracized in a big, big way. And so, no, I cannot give you quantitative figures like how you want, which is a fair question. But again, the COSCLC, it's not a coercive government entity. It's a private organization that goes and proves through trial by jury instead of this horrible system, it's just trial by press of the alternative media, which is nothing but the trifecta of slander, libel, and defamation. I mean, please, how childish. But instead goes to the evidence, and they confer with each other. They double-check, triple-check, and if they find that there's at least probable cause, they will then issue an indictment to the accused. If he doesn't respond, it goes public. If he does respond, they go before the jury and try it again. But the whole point is to have the process be fair and not have this mudslinging that's so public that paints all of us and makes everyone look like loonies. That doesn't mean he can at least handle it in a private channel and until such time that it's ready for public consumption.
I mean, for me, speaking as far as the case that I brought to the COC, the reason why I brought it wasn't so much because I knew there's still a lot of sheeple in the movement that no matter what are still going to follow Luke, still going to donate to him and whatever. The reason why I brought it up to him, brought it to the COC, was so that people could see that it's not a matter of jealousy. It's not a matter of mudslinging and slandering him. If other people who do not know him, when presented with the evidence that I provided, could come to the same conclusion I did. So right. It was more for validation of what I was saying for years. So that's usually what I took out of it, because I know for a fact that, you know, there are people out there that they're not going to pay attention to the evidence that I provided to them. They're not going to look at it. They're just going to dismiss it as COINTELPRO.
Yeah, that's true. And what I see as a major problem within the truth movement, it's quote unquote cult followings.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We follow so many people and follow them blindly.
Yeah, and Any of the work.
I just had a question. I mean, this is just for me and the rest of the audience. Louis, are you able to put the website of the CLSS, or sorry, I'm really bad with acronyms. And
do you know how to spell the word committee? COMMITTEE.
Yeah.
.org/court. So it's committee.org/court.
Yeah, committee.org/court. I mean, just to make it simple. But I will copy and paste it, put in the chat room again. Boom, there we go.
Appreciate it.
Let me introduce the guests again, because we got some people that just joined us. We got Vinny Eastwood of The Vinny Eastwood Show, and also Sleepy Salsa of thelastbastille.wordpress.com. And we are talking about the common law courts,
which, in my summation, I mean, based upon what you've said, it's actually to take away what is often dismissed as COINTELPRO or disinformation, so that if you're critiquing somebody within the movement, mm-hmm. there is, in fact, a jury process, a verification process, rather than somebody making an accusation
exactly.
without backing it up with evidence. And I believe this is actually an essential part. And I don't know if you guys know this, but I actually was part of a cult once. I had no idea that it was a cult. These guys were actually talking common law and setting up a new system so that we wouldn't have to be under the New Zealand government and stuff like that. And they're creating all these businesses and that sort of thing. And this guy who was running it, Shane Wenzel, he was a total psychopath, right? He was having sex with the girls who were running the offices. He's an alleged pedophile. He's always very violent, throwing stuff around and being generally psychotic, swearing, that sort of thing. And so once I realized what he was doing, was he was attempting to get out of the New Zealand government's jurisdiction so he could commit any crime he wants, including dealing drugs, committing pedophilia, or dishonest business practice, things of this nature. And so as soon as I found that out, I was down there with my camera, filming him, assaulting myself and assaulting my friend. And every time he tries to recruit another New Zealand activist, most of them know me, so they say, "Hey, Vinny, have you heard about this guy?" And I go, "Watch the 7-minute video of him assaulting me and my mate and lying blatantly on camera, and you tell me whether you want to put yourself in harm's way like I did.
Right. We got a call, we got a caller from North Dakota on. So if you're calling from North Dakota, hello.
Hey,
Patrick?
Yes.
No, who is it?
Patrick.
Oh, that's what I said, Patrick. Yo, how come? What, are you calling from a tin can? What the fuck?
Calling from a phone.
Damn.
Yeah.
Damn. What? You calling from the Obama phone? The sound quality sucks dick. What the fuck?
I got a welfare phone. Okay. I don't know.
Oh. I got the Obama phone.
Hey, my dad got that.
Oh. Well, how's that work? Do you get good service on that shit? You know, if you are low income, you know, keep Obama in president. Oh, fuck. That speaking about, oh, well, anyways, don't want to go into another fucking,
Obama rant.
Service out of those phones, I hear.
Yeah, I know. Anyways, Sleepy, what do you think about the ADL's attempt to link the, you know, common law courts in general to right-wing racist groups?
Well, I mean, this is all just establishment propaganda. You know, it's part of the info war. I mean, that's just what it is. I mean, it's actually kind of funny too to draw a parallel to that. I mean, you remember when they first started with the different self-proclaimed militia groups a while back?
Right.
Well, and now they're actually moving towards anyone who calls himself an anarcho-capitalist or voluntarist, which are just offshoots from more libertarian crowd. So now it's funny. It's like the SPLC, just as the establishment mouthpiece for identifying political dissidents, they're just kind of going out after pretty much almost everybody now. I think the only people they're avoiding are some specific types of environmentalists that I'm aware of. But that's it. They pretty much are going after everybody now. So even if you're more of a kind of a nerdy libertarian type, and you just don't like the coercive nature of the state, you're just as bad as, you know, a militia guy or whatever, you know, term they come up with next. I find it particularly amusing. It's almost like they're running out of things to get upset about. And I find it interesting, too, that the SPLC likes to bill itself as a supposed civil liberties organization when, quite frankly, everything they talk about is pretty much about anything but.
Well, sure. They often link Ron Paul supporters to being Tea Party guys. I don't know where they can draw the conclusion that Ron Paul supporters are Tea Party guys. I don't know. I don't know if he's got any direct affiliation with the Tea Party, to be honest with you.
Well, not really, because especially since the Tea Party got hijacked by the Republican Party, and now it's like, oh, we're going to support Romney. Romney, really? Tea Party guys, really? Really? You're going to support Romney? Really? Really? Schmucks.
It almost seems like these type of ventures almost can only thrive in certain areas, like New Hampshire, which is trying to push the Free State Project.
I don't see the difference supporting Romney and supporting Ron Paul. It's like they're both, you know, part of the same secret societies. Like, you know, I don't get it.
Mm-hmm. All right, well... let's keep it focused on the CLC.
I was wanting to interject something here, Louis.
Yeah, go ahead.
Have you noticed how most of us don't actually understand really anything about most of the things that we think and most of the things that we do? Like, I have no idea how this computer actually works. I wouldn't be able to take it apart if I tried in a million years, right?
Right.
And this actually also, I think, relates very much to politics. And I'm feeling a bit tired today because I was up last night to about maybe 4:30 in the morning, and then I had to go. I was drinking and having at a party, and what was interesting about this party is that every single person that I talked to at this party really wanted to talk with me about conspiracy theories, about things that really mattered in their lives. Like one guy told me. Something that he didn't really tell anybody, that on his 21st birthday, he had to fly halfway across the country to see his mother, who had gotten a double brain hemorrhage on his 21st birthday, only to be told by the doctor that you've got two choices. You can either pull your mother off life support, or you can deliver the rest of her life as a vegetable.
Wow.
And he knew that his mother would never, ever want to live life as a vegetable. So at the age of 21, he had to pull the cord on his own mother.
Mm.
You know? And what this conversation, it was like I was kind of like bouncing around these different circles, these different people, and having these really intense conversations about trauma that people have suffered, and about relationships, and about conspiracy, and about understanding concepts that are really highbrow and all that sort of stuff. And I was just thinking to myself this morning while I was at the protest, how myopic is my life? Because I can't do small talk anymore. I can't talk about things that don't matter.
Right.
I really am only comfortable talking about things that are intense. I'm really only comfortable talking about things that are highbrow, things that are traumatic, just to speak of and think of. And we were talking about libertarian and fascism and right wing and left wing and all that kind of stuff. And what Bill Cooper said about this is that right wing isn't fascism. Fascism is actually left wing.
It's extreme left.
National socialism, you know. Guards on every street corner, public censors, watching what you do and all of that kind of stuff. It's a totalitarian socialist state. And the argument of left and right, meaning a totalitarian government that focuses on business versus a totalitarian government that just focuses on being a totalitarian government, they're actually both left-wing principles. There's nothing right-wing about them. Right-wing is about individuals. It's individualism versus collectivism, and people don't know the difference. It's really concerning to me. This very, very basic principle that I only learned maybe a year plus ago, that there was actually a difference. And I think everybody had best realized that you are either right-wing, which meaning you believe that you should be your own master and nobody should be able to compel you or tell you to do anything unless you hurt somebody or damage their private property, or you're a collectivist, which means you believe that you both can't take care of yourself and believe that nobody else can take care of themselves, and so you need authority figures in your life at all times telling you what to do and forcing you to do it if you don't want to.
Thoughts? Anybody?
Sometimes you also need to be silent for a moment just to let things sink in.
Right.
And another thing that happened in a conversation last night is we were talking about the concept of God. Like, my concept of God is very different to religious people's or anything like that, you know. And this girl who was an introvert, you know how when you're having a conversation and there is no gap in between what people are saying? One person talks, right, and people aren't really listening to them. They're simply waiting for their turn to speak, to dive right in. And there's no pause. There's no ability for people who are introverted and maybe perhaps a little shy to actually enter the conversation. And also at that point, you recognize that if all you're doing is waiting for your turn to speak and you're not really listening, it means regardless of how highbrow the topics you're talking about, nothing actually gets through and you don't have the ability to process what it is that you're hearing. That was a really profound realization for me, that I'm an asshole. You know, I don't try to listen to other people speak. I don't really try to hear and feel what they're saying, and I don't allow time for it to sink in.
Isn't it?
And I think many of us in this movement are like that.
Yeah, isn't it because we think that we got the answers to everything? We think we're know-it-all, so it's like it doesn't matter what anyone else has to say,
because we feel we have the answer.
No, it's pride. Like every human being is, you know, pride comes before the fall, and yeah, that's basically the biggest flaw of humanity is we're so proud.
Yeah, and I believe that's where a lot of the infighting comes from. And, you know, that and not recognizing that, hey, they're complete assholes out there that will knowingly sell something with mercury, you know, tangy tangerine, and you know, claim that you're going to make $1 million a year off of it, and you're poisoning each other, you know, and not giving a crap when, you know, you should really be thinking, all right, how I'm going to help somebody else and also become more independent from my government. And also
that has
be aware.
Mercury in it, no shit?
Yeah.
Beyond Tangy Tangerine, what Alex Jones sells?
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Of course.
But,
yeah, because...
look at the Mark Dice video.
Yeah.
So if you Google Mark Dice, Alex Jones, Tangy Tangerine... it should come up with the video, and there's been so many people who come out and attack him who know him personally, who have a business relationship with him. The owner of American Freedom Radio, Danny Romero, has told me some really, really horrific stories and advertisers stolen wholesale and calling out Alex Jones and him actually admitting it and things like that. And taking a radio transmitter off him, changing the locks on the transmitter, and then broadcasting his own show with it and co-opting his business partner and stuff like that. Jack Blood getting a call while he's having dinner with his mate from Alex Jones saying that his mate's undermining him and trying to sabotage his show and all of that kind of stuff. And then his friend across the table's phone rings after he finishes the conversation, and it's Alex Jones saying, Jack Blood's trying to sabotage you and trying to destroy everything. Infighting.
Right.
He knows the New World Order tactics of command and control warfare, of divide and conquer, and he uses it on us. And
so,
as I mentioned before about cult followings, heaven forbid I should turn into some form of douchebag. I would hope that people like the Common Law Court and all my friends who are the chief, you know, scumbaggery exposers, as far as I'm concerned, of the world, would expose me utterly and completely and take me off air and put me out of business so that I couldn't continue to lead people in a direction that is not their own, that they don't have full awareness of. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I totally agree.
But if I can say something, I got to disagree with earlier when... somebody characterized fascism as a left-wing movement that's taking the modern definitions of the term and implanting it on that. The left and right-wing definition originally arose from the seating at the French Assembly, okay? So those on the right were the ones who were the most authoritarian. At the furthest right, those who believed the king could do no wrong. They were divinely appointed by God. And on the left side, not quite furthest to the left, but you had Frederick Bastiat, who you mentioned earlier. And on the furthest left, you had Pierre-Joseph Proudhon, the first who seriously considered himself an anarchist. So what we – and that was Frederick Bastiat, I mean, classical liberalism.
Are you saying that the definitions have actually been flipped around? Right-wing is actually left-wing and left-wing is actually right-wing?
Yes. And what we would call limited constitutional government would be on the left.
Okay.
All right. You happy,
Mike? It's amazing. Okay. Well, I haven't seen any documentation to that effect. And why is it that right-wingers are all now today talking about their civil liberties and trying to be libertarian and anarcho-syndicalist, and those on the left
they call themselves right-wingers? I mean, people can call themselves anything. That's the modern definition. But, I mean, this could be looked up. I don't have a source on hand right now, but
okay,
common
well,
knowledge
Mike,
where
Mike, people Mike, are Mike, sitting. Mike, I'm sorry to cut you off, but we are talking about the common law court. Before this hour's out, I would like Sleepy to discuss the case between me and Luke Rakowski and how it benefits everyone. So, Sleepy, can you please explain that, please?
Yeah, sure. Glad to do that. All right, I'm going to run through the brief synopsis of it, and then, time permitting, we can go through at least a couple of details to kind of show the quality work being done here. All right, so in the matter of, Louis Baez versus Lukasz Rutkowski. This is COSCLC unanswered indictment number 120301. This was issued on December 10th of 2012. The grand jury found probable cause on 5 counts against Luke Rutkowski. And I put a link in the chat room, and somebody can do that again, go back up and repost it so that people can go grab it. But it is available from the committee.org. All right, so let's go through the synopsis. Count one is fraud. The accused, under false pretenses, before I continue, just keep in mind that the accused is Luke Rutkowski. Count one, fraud. The accused, under false pretenses, collected monies from individuals who were led to believe that the donations were going to be allocated towards the 9/11 first responders' medical expenses, as well as the equipment expenses for We Are Change. Count two, embezzlement. The accused embezzled funds from donations intended for the medical expenses of 9/11 first responders, as well as We Are Change equipment, into his own personal bank account between 2007 and 2009. He has collected funds exceeding $60,000 and has made large cash withdrawals nearly matching those deposits. Count three, libel. The accused repeatedly damaged the reputations of those individual members of We Are Change who inquired into the accounting, as required by their own code of conduct, by insinuating that those members work for the government, as well as answering direct questions in a deceptive manner. Count four, extortion. The accused has deceived the We Are Change membership about the organization's legal status and raised money on a false pretext. Count five, fraud. The accused solicited for donations intended for a legal defense fund on behalf of himself and two other We Are Change members and retained all the contributions after the charges that warranted the legal defense fund were dropped. So to recap just very briefly, we have one count of embezzlement, one count of libel, one count of extortion, and two counts of fraud. This is in the case of Baez versus Rutkowski, COSCLC indictment number 120301.
Why haven't you taken him to a real court? Are these actual crimes that he's committed, or are these just, you know, truth of crimes, like he's been a bit dishonest here?
Okay, well, part of the reason was because when I first started off, I did try to take them through traditional legal means, but they didn't view it as important.
That's kind of typical for the government.
That's why you file a private prosecution in the courts.
But
that's what happens
untouched
here in New Zealand. If you can't, if the justice system will not bring somebody to justice, you file a private prosecution in order to bring them to justice yourself.
Right. I don't think we have that sort of thing here. And since it was kind of hard for me because I personally didn't lose any money, there weren't any damages other than to my reputation in the group.
That's defamation.
Yeah,
you can sue for that.
Yeah, but that's really hard to prove. And really, do I really want to deal with the same government that's trying to kill me? I mean, I really just wanted to, like I said before, I just wanted to get, you know, validation for what I believe was true, that he was a thief, by people that didn't know him from an independent party. So I just felt that this was more of a you know, more patriotic way of doing it.
Of which the results are
either you know, either way, you know, I wasn't going to get the results that I wanted. Luke being fully discredited and locked up for what he did. I mean, so at least I could say, look, I didn't do this as a motivation of jealousy or revenge. It was just what's right is right. This is an independent party that I brought in that I had to, now, it wasn't enough just to get them the evidence and tell them, hey, Luke's guilty. Look at this. I had to put everything in context. Everything had to be laid out in front of them. I mean, the burden of proof was tremendous in order to get this.
Well, Louis, since you were the accuser, that kind of makes sense, especially considering that Luke's reputation is on the line. And Vincent, I understand you're concerned about enforcement. Let me add on to that. I've written about vetting and ostracism before, and since ostracism is the enforcement mechanism, let me kind of emphasize a little bit more about that. Now, generally speaking about ostracism outside the context of the COSCLC, it has now been broached that picking and choosing whom you associate with is actually much more important than most dissidents would give credit to, considering that ostracism is recognized here as a powerful negative incentive. If such is indeed the case, how come most political dissidents don't use it more often to their own advantage? For example, Stefan Molyneux has explained in his, in one of his books, Everyday Anarchy, quote, "Anarchists recognize the power of implicit and voluntary social contract and the power of both positive incentives, such as pay and career success, as well as negative incentives, such as social disapproval, economic exclusion, and social ostracism." He goes on to say in the sequel book, Practical Anarchy, quote, "In the past, undesired social behavior was punished through ostracism and risks ameliorated through voluntary friendly societies. A man who left his wife and children, or a woman who got pregnant out of wedlock, was no longer welcome in decent society." So, continuing on with this, contracts can be enforced without resorting to violence. The tool of economic and social ostracism is the most powerful weapon for dealing with those who repeatedly violate moral and social rules. We do not need to throw people into economically unproductive debtors' prisons or send men with guns to kidnap and incarcerate them. All we need do, here's the key point, all we need to do is publish their crimes for all to see and let the natural justice of society take care of the rest, end quote. And let me finish with this one other additional point by someone else who's a different type of dissident. Now, I'm sure that even constitutionalists can appreciate the liberty of association that they currently enjoy pursuant to the First Amendment. So in the parallel context of dealing with the state itself, especially Big Brother, the secret police, and their many subsidiaries, ostracism is a devastatingly effective tool against institutionalized bullying. As Gary Hunt explained in his Vortex article, quote, "It is time for us to change the game around and get them," meaning the bad guys, the government, "to fear us. Not through violence, rather through exposure," here's a key point, "through exposure and removal of those who would seek to undermine our ability to function productively. It is time for us to be as serious about ridding ourselves of these subversive elements as we are about our individual causes, for all are doomed to failure unless we regain control of our own activities." And
well, here's the deal, though. I mean, we've seen throughout history that social ostracization works on those who typically are not well-equipped, both physically and mentally, to handle mass opposition. Our government very much is. So you're saying that the way to enact what the founding fathers wanted, which was that the people should not be afraid of the government, but that the government should be afraid of its people. You're talking about society ostracizing the government. If I'm assuming correctly, and correct me if I'm wrong here.
You're slightly wrong. Really, I'm not.
Well, I mean, it's really difficult to get a whole bunch of guys who are used to using blunt force and shaming them. Again, you're going back to the whole situation of, you know, you're going to go to an armed robber and say, shame on you.
Okay,
you're going to have 500 people say, shame on you, to the bank robber. That's not going to stop the guy. He's going to start riddling people with lead.
It wouldn't stop him any more than a gun ban area sign stops a mass shooter.
All right, stop for one second. Okay, you said society. That's the slight mistake you're referring to. I am not referring to society, whatever the hell that is. I am referring to individuals and groups of individuals, who have chosen to oppose the establishment in some way. They are called political dissidents. There are many different types of them. So a good chunk of them are what is known as the patriot community, and at a separate time, I can provide a definition for that. The point is, anybody who's like an anti-establishment type, who cares about their freedom and liberty, are already supposed to be of like mind, even amidst the various different political ideologies that exist for doing so. However, we all have this common entity, this thing, whether you want to be, use a libertarian term of the state, or you want to call it the central government like the constitutionalists do, or however you want to define the enemy entity. The point is, we all have similar values and all that, so we all should be working together. So if you have disruptive elements, a disruptive individual, whether it's controlled opposition or just as useful idiot, there is a way to contain the problem and cut it out before it has a chance to harm everybody. So when you mention about stopping guys with guns, I'm sorry, sir, but that's completely inapplicable to what I'm talking about, which is something very, very, very specific. And I would highly recommend, I'll put it in the chat room so you can read it later.
Yeah.
I would implore you to read Gary Hunt's article on Vortex. It's very, very important.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you're absolutely right. We're not talking about fighting a violent person with words. What we're talking about is fighting somebody who uses words with words, you know? It's kind of a resistance of scale. And the ostracization of people who are perhaps guilty of some form of scumbaggery, lying or deception of some description, we've just founded the core principles for guerrilla media, and we did have a debate about if we invite journalists into the fold, how in fact could we actually punish them, at all, considering we have no real physical enforcement mechanism. And omission, ostracization, and exposure are death blows to a journalist's credibility. If you never mention them, and if you do, you're exposing the bad things that they have done, there's not too many people who can survive a hit like that. But of course, it's about exposure of scale. I can't, for example, reach the entirety of the American public audience like, say, CNN can. So if I try to expose somebody on my show, they're only being exposed to my audience. Whereas, again, like I say, it's exposure of scale. You can really only take people out and destroy their credibility if you're indeed a larger entity than they are to begin with.
Mm-hmm. Or you could do death by a million cuts.
But you can't have a million cuts if you ain't got a million people doing the cutting.
True. All right. So anyways, I would like to move on. I'm going to take a quick break, and then we're just going to go start the new topic, talk about the whole assault rifle, guns, whatever, Second Amendment. So I'm going to play this song since Monday is Martin Luther King Day. I would like to play this song, which is basically auto-tuned from one of his speeches. So come back. This is the Crowd Shot Radio Show, kicking the issues right in the balls.